Hey y'all, welcome to Up the Coast with Alex and Britt. This is officially episode 5, week 4 of our podcast segments where we are giving you the rundown of all things ACC softball across the country. So Britt, first week of ACC conference play, some teams opted in to playing their first couple of ACC series this weekend. Some teams are still competing in tournament play across the country. But before we get into any kind of conference updates, the first part of RPI was released for the season, the first one in the 2024 softball season. So Britt, talk to us a little bit.
Yeah, everybody gets excited when the first RPI comes out. Could you see the rankings every week from ESPN, D1 Softball, Softball America? Everybody has their own opinions on who should be ranked where, but RPI, the rating percentage index, is like a mathematical, not like a math, it is a mathematical formula that takes into account team's winning percentage, their strength of schedule, and their opponent's strength of schedule, and does all this math stuff and spits out your rankings and RPI. And why it's important is come postseason, the selection committee uses RPI as a big part of where they rank people and allow teams to get into postseason. You have your automatic qualifiers, you win your conference tournament, you're in, right? But everybody else, they're depending on the selection committee to get into postseason. The safe number is usually 40. You want to be 40 and below and think you have a pretty good shot of getting in. But they also determine the top 8 seeds if you get to host regionals and supers, and then the top 16 if you get to host your regional, which is a big deal. So RPI is huge, but you know, there's some things about it that, you know, this week's RPI, first one, there's going to be a lot of changes, but it's a good tool. I think the selection committee may rely on it a little bit more than I would like. It is what it is. So what do you think about what's come out this week with the RPI?
Yeah, I definitely agree. I think the RPI is definitely something that is taken into account a lot more than maybe people allude to with those postseason standings and what that looks like for regionals and supers with those top 16 seeds alone. But, you know, I think it's always interesting, and I think it just shows kind of the body of work, right? Because it's about performance on the field, and you've got to win those games. But it also really speaks, or is supposed to speak, a lot to the strength of schedule, which, you know, Britt, the ACC historically hasn't always been the strongest conference competition-wise. Mm-hmm. And so I remember back in the beginning part of my career playing at Florida State that, you know, we had to schedule such tough out-of-conference games with RPI in mind. And I think that's totally shifted the mindset, which is such an interesting component now, because teams go and get to play in the ACC season, regular season, right? And it's just one of the best in the country. So I love to see the way the conference has evolved, but I absolutely think it is pertinent for these teams to have great teams on their schedule that they're playing both in and
Yeah, you talk about the scheduling. It's really hard. Coaches have to take into consideration their conference schedule and how they're going to try and manipulate, if you will, their RPI out of conference. Who are they going to schedule? Are they going to, because if you schedule a 200 plus RPI team and you drop that game, that's really going to hurt you. But if you win it, it's not going to help you very much. So there's definitely some tactics that go into it. There's a couple things about RPI that I would like to see changed. You know, RPI doesn't take into consideration home, away, or neutral wins. I think winning on the road is really hard. Winning's hard to begin with, but winning on the road should have a little bit more weight, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. The other thing they don't take into consideration, which they do in like basketball with their net ratings and their KenPom ratings, is margin of victory. I mean, if you beat somebody by 20 runs, I think that should be a big deal instead of a one run, 10 inning ball game, right? But we've got that run rule thing.
I was going to say, dare I say it? We've got the run rule.
So, you know, I think that takes that away. So there's a lot of reasons why they don't do it, but, you know, it's imperfect, but it's something we use, and it's exciting to see when it comes out every year.
Yeah.
So as far as the ACC as a whole, the conference RPI came in fourth behind the SEC, Pac-12, and Big 12. And like I said, I think that's going to change quite a bit, as will the team's rankings as the season goes on.
Yeah. And Britt, do you want to kind of tell anybody listening what some of the ACC teams came in at given?
Yeah. The top ACC team wasn't Duke, who, you know, only has one loss on the year, is Clemson. They came in at 6. They're 12-4 on the season. They have losses to Mississippi State, Missouri, Georgia, and NC State, which, you know, I kind of scratch my head at that, as, you know, Missouri They're 4 RPI, so that wasn't a bad loss. Georgia's was 2 RPI, NC State 32, and Mississippi State, I think, 20. So there's no bad losses in there, but no real quality wins, but they still came in at 6th. Virginia Tech's 11th, Duke 20, Florida State 30, NC State 32, and Virginia Tech 35. And those are the top above or below 40 teams where you want to be in the ACC right now. So there's 2, 4, 6 ACC teams within that safety margin.
And remind people listening too that that safety margin takes into account if you don't win your conference. That's right. Where you want to be. Conference winners, conference tournament championships, or champions, I should say, get that automatic bid. So RPI is definitely crucial. So any last thoughts on RPI and kind of where that sits right now?
Yeah.
Thank God it's only week one, right?
Right. I think you got to take week one RPI with a grain of salt. You can't put too much weight into it, but it's fun to get in kind of the dirt and see where teams are ranked for it. Maybe didn't realize that they had a bad loss here, a good win there. And, you know, I look forward to the RPI every week because it is, like we said, such an important tool come postseason play.
Shall I say it's like the softball Bible?
Yeah, it's close. It's close. They use it a lot.
Yeah, they do. They do. Definitely relied on it. So let's get into real quick before we start ACC matchups and stuff. A midweek update for you. Last week, we were definitely kind of looking ahead at that Clemson-UGA game. Mm-hmm. So Clemson played Georgia midweek last week on Wednesday night. Georgia coming in as the top 5, number 5, and number 3 as well in a couple of different polls across the country. And unfortunately, Clemson got the loss 2-1 on the game. But thoughts, initial thoughts, I think, on the game.
No, I think Valerie Cagle did a great job in the circle. Georgia is a heavy offensive team. They can swing the bat. They can put the ball over the fence. They can hit gaps. So I think Cagle held her own. I think where Clemson got in trouble is they left 13 runners on base. They found ways to get runners on, but they couldn't do anything with them. And if you're going to go against a top 5 team, you've got to have those timely hits and put runs across. So I think they had a solid game. And like we were talking about scheduling, Georgia's number 2 in RPI. So this loss didn't hurt them, but it was definitely helpful in their strength of schedule. So I think it was a good fight for Clemson, but 13 runners left on base, that hurts you afterwards.
Absolutely. It definitely does. And yeah, I mean, definitely would have felt a little better to walk away with the win, but you talk about people left on base for it. And I think part of that too is Georgia threw 3 pitchers that game, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of following suit of the standard and I think expectation right now across the country of pitching by committee. And that's definitely what Georgia did there. Clemson obviously leaning more heavily on the arm of Valerie Cagle, which of course, why wouldn't you, right? Reigning player of the year nationally, like so good. But only 11 Clemson players got playing time in that game, which I thought was just an interesting note, as opposed to UGA, who had 16 people come in play, right? And I think that just shows that Georgia might have had a little bit more depth. And when you have depth, you know that it's always making your team better. So Clemson kind of staying true to their starting 9, minimal rotations in, and then Georgia definitely bringing people off the bench for the role play. So I think that I would like to see teams across the ACC as a whole implementing that bench, right? Depth is so important, especially as you get through the season. And, you know, you got to start letting people get that experience now, because otherwise they're going to do it in pressure filled moments at the end of the season. And you're going to wish you put them in sooner. So that's not just Clemson alone, right? That's right. All teams. And I want that to be the level of expectation.
Yeah. I think that's important. It feels like we're in the meat of season right now, but we're still pretty early in. So getting that experience, injuries happen in this sport, right? You don't want somebody's first plate appearance be because somebody got hurt. So, you know, going in there, giving more experience, and with the depth, you're able to play matchups more. And I think that's what Georgia was able to do against Valerie Cagle.
So getting into ACC play as a whole, we talked last week a little bit about the level of difficulty it takes when facing a team 3 times, right? I think that's hard. And we talked just about the seeing teams over and over. You have so much information, so much data at your disposal. So I think really to come out on top with these series wins and clinch that victory, it's going to take strategy. It's going to take a lot of information. And then, of course, as always, it's going to take execution, and can't take any of those 3 lightly. So before we get into specific ACC teams, any last thoughts on just general?
Yeah, I think it's hard to beat somebody 1 time. Winning is hard. To beat somebody twice is even harder, and 3 times to sweep a series is very difficult. The coaches are getting, like you said, so much information that's out there now going into a series. Instead, before they're preparing when they're in these tournaments, four or five teams that you're getting information for. So you might just get a little here, a little there, but now it's just information overload. You've got so much video. So it's a whole different kind of ball game prepping for ACC play. You take that information and then you're able to turn it into your strategy and at the end of the day, execute. And then taking information from day one to day two to day three. So it's a whole different ball game than what we saw pre-conference.
Quite literally a whole different ball game. So let's get into the first matchup of the weekend, Duke and Syracuse at Duke's home stadium. So doubleheader Saturday, three games in 24-hour period because of course, inclement weather, can't help it. But I'm sorry, I hate to see three games played in 24 hours. I think it's ludicrous. I think it's so
especially
bad for
conference,
the athletes.
Right.
It's so tough. And I just don't think there's much that comes good from having that be the scenario. However, I'm not naive enough to know that you can't control the weather and you've got to get your games in, right? Mm-hmm. So doubleheader Saturday, Duke won the first two games, 7-0, 6-0 respectively. Jayla Wright, career milestone, 300 career strikeouts, reached that on Saturday, 2-0 on the weekend, 10 innings pitch total. Britt, what are your thoughts right now on Duke pitching staff?
Oh, Jayla Wright, just her presence this year is completely different than what we saw last year. She was good last year, but they had to rely on Cassidy Kerr quite a bit to find the success they did. Jayla Wright was expected to take over as the number one, but she had a lot of help from Kerr. But this year, I felt going back to last year, I feel like she felt that pressure of being the number one. This year, she's going out there and saying, bring it. Let's go. How dare you step in the box against me? I'm going right after you. I love her confidence, her demeanor in the circle. And it's showing in her success she's having in as a pitcher against top hitters. She's doing great this year. And I think a lot of it's in between the ears and her confidence is back. It's great to see.
Yeah, so what you're saying is she has some swag, huh? Did you have swag?
In my mind, I did. I don't know about anybody else thought what I was doing was swaggy, but to me, I thought it was. But looking back, I'm like, oh, gosh. But hey.
Cringy. Maybe a little cringy, huh?
Very much so. But it made me feel good. And you feel good, you play good.
Hey, I agree. You look good, you feel good, you play good, baby. Yeah. Right? That's the motto. So
that's right.
Duke ended up shutting out Syracuse for the sweep on Sunday, won that game three shutout sweep. I think that alone is impressive. Duke's pitching staff is looking so good, but Duke does not do it in the circle alone. I think that they're the total team right now, and they're looking good across the
Yeah, we talk about pitching staff. We'll touch on that one more time. Is five different pitchers didn't give up a run this weekend. Mm-hmm. So they've got arms. They have that depth we were talking about. They also didn't commit an error on the weekend in conference play. Early in the season, you expect still some mistakes. None for Duke. They're playing clean defense. They're pitching well. And they can hit the ball. And they don't just do it one way. They don't rely on a home run. They don't rely on short game. They do it all. They hit gaps. They hit bombs. They bunt. They slap. They steal. Like you said, they're a complete team. I think they're the best team currently in the ACC.
Completely agree, right? I was just going to say so that Duke can hit, they can pitch, they can run the bases, they can field. Yeah. I think that's why they're number one right now. Yeah. So good stuff. All right. Clemson NC State at Clemson's home field. Mm-hmm. Clemson dropped game one. Mm-hmm. What the hell is all I have?
They had the doubleheader too, right? They had to move the game from Friday to Saturday because of weather. And game one, you expect Clemson to come out and, this is a rebuild year, supposedly, for NC State with the new head coach and everything they went through last year. You know, you expect them to be competitive. It's the ACC, but to come out and beat Clemson 6-1. But Clemson didn't start Valerie Cagle. And I think you talk about the doubleheaders and how you don't like them. I think it's also takes into consideration, strategy. Why, if they would have played Friday, 100% I think Valerie Cagle pitches that game because then she's fresh. She could still throw Saturday, but you throw her game one, you won't have her for game two. And do you think that was it? Or do you think maybe Clemson was just like, oh, we don't even need to throw Valerie Cagle?
If I had to pick, I think Clemson underestimated NC State. And I think that NC State said, okay, that's fine. We'll make you pay. And I love to see that, right? Because I think that we called them last week, or we called NC State our sleeper team. And I think that they could show up on any given Sunday, or in this case, Saturday, and beat you, right? And I think that we talked about that. And I was like, I'd hate to be on the other side of that because they would just come in and ruin your day. And it looks like they ruined the start of Clemson's day on Saturday. But Clemson did a good job responding. But I think it says a lot about NC State just target on the back of Clemson, and NC State has nothing to lose. And so I love to see how they play.
Yeah, I think they showed that they have a lot of pride that, you know, they felt like they were disrespected, even if it was a strategy thing, not just like, hey, we're good with whoever's in the circle, but they took it as a disrespect and they came out in that first inning and just went on the attack. I mean, they were swinging. They never let off the gas. It was a nice thing to see for NC State to come out there. And at Clemson's home field, I mean, that place is packed. It's the booming. Whole berm in the outfield, everything's sold out. I mean, you're in hostile territory and you came out and made a statement game one. Props to NC State.
Yeah, I hope NC State was a little offended of like, wait, you guys are going to give us your ace? Okay, that's cool, right? But I think on the alternative side, what I love to see in that game one too with Lindsay Lefwich at NC State is that she had such a short leash on the starting pitcher for the Wolfpack. And I'm sorry, but sometimes like games on the line or you never know, you want to go in and make a statement. And maybe she saw that as an opportunity because Cagle wasn't getting the start. Maybe Lefwich then had an approach or a plan or maybe changed it at that point when she got the lineup and said, you know what, this is going to be the game that we win if we take one from Clemson and we need to at least take one. So I love that she had the short leash on the starting pitcher because I think it really did put NC State in a position of success because Alicia Wechselman came in and threw a hell of a game. So.
Yeah, and I think putting in Wechselman, you go back to last year when NC State, I mean, they weren't winning at all and Clemson was rolling. Alicia Wechselman came in and had one of the biggest upsets of the season against Clemson. So she's got something out for the Tigers for sure.
I think so.
Making pitching changes, I think that decision is very difficult for anybody, especially a first-year head coach and Lefwich, she was on it.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. So Clemson came back, responded well, secured game two with an 8-0 victory. Valerie Cagle in the circle, no surprise there. They won by way of run rule. So game three, an absolute hitting fest. I mean, it was back and forth. It was such a high-scoring game. What did it end? I think it ended like 14-9 or something like that. Yeah, it was crazy. I was watching it while I was giving lessons and I was like talking to my hitter. I was like, yeah, this isn't normal, but like actually it kind of is.
Kind of is, right?
Yeah, it is common theme, right? So just crazy.
What I liked about that game is NC State came out, responded after getting one hit in second game. Yes, the day before comes out, puts up 5-0, a 5-run lead on Clemson, who committed 3 errors in the top of the first, but what I liked to see from Clemson was their fight. They came right back and scored 8 unanswered. And then NC State showed their fight and went back up. And then Clemson fought right back and put the lead, put the nail in the coffin. But saw some fire from Clemson that I haven't really seen much this year because they're such an enthusiastic, like animated team with Mackenzie Clark and Logaleo. I mean, they're a senior team that has a lot of pressure on them. But I felt like even though they were down early, they played with fight and fun and enthusiasm, and that was good to see from Clemson.
Yeah, I love to see it. Clemson's definitely looking good. So, Virginia Tech, Notre Dame. Virginia Tech went on to sweep Notre Dame, outscoring the Irish 29-9. Here's how it happened. Yet again, another doubleheader, right? Thank you, weather. Love that. So, another 3 games played in a 24-hour time span. I think it's just crazy, but Virginia Tech, a lot of power on the weekend.
Right. They're, number 3 in the country in home runs. They hit 8 home runs on Saturday alone. I mean, they're long balls there. They're looking to put it over the fence, and if you make a mistake, they're going to make you pay up and down their lineup. They have the ability to put that over the plate. But I think what I was most impressed with was in the circle on Saturday. Freshman Emma Mazzarone and Emma Limley threw 2 shutouts, complete games. And then on Sunday, Lindsey Grind came in and threw a complete game, not a shutout, but a complete game win. So they had 3 pitchers throw complete games. And we don't see that very often from anybody in our sport, let alone 3 different pitchers in conference be able to throw all 7 innings. So that's got to feel good for Virginia Tech.
Definitely, right? Like you kind of look at this tunnel, right? And that's like a light at the end of the tunnel right there. Yeah. You see with Virginia Tech and their pitching staff, one that struggled just a couple years ago, but responding really well with Emma Limley at the charge or leading the charge, I should say. But this is also a Virginia Tech team a couple weeks ago that held a very good UGA team, just like Clemson, to minimal run production. So I think it's saying a lot about the pitching staff for these teams, specifically this one, Virginia Tech. So love to see that success. And then Britt, I think you just found some really cool notes about even Notre Dame right now, Karina Gaskins and kind of,
yeah, she's a, She's a former ACC Player of the Year, but she's leading the country in walks per game with 1.5 walks a game. That tells me that teams are taking their best player, Karina Gaskins, out of the lineup. They're not letting her be a major factor. And it was successful for Virginia Tech. You know, she's not going to hurt me on first base very right. much. You make somebody else step up. So I think Notre Dame, they want to find some success in conference. Some other people are going to have to step up and protect Karina Gaskins.
Right. And we talked about that. I was going to say, we talked about the importance of when you have a really great player, and in this instance, it's Karina Gaskins, and how important it is to surround her with other really yep. good players, right? Or really great players too. Mm-hmm. And because they offer that level of protection so that at that point, your best hitter has to get pitched to, or if it's not going to be them and they're going to get walked, you have other really great hitters around them that can also kind of make right. do, right? And pick up that slack from getting walked. So good stuff. Good stuff. It's like we were foreshadowing a couple weeks ago. I love when that happens. It makes us feel good. So
yeah, makes us look smart.
Makes us look way smarter than we are. Yeah. I'm just kidding. I've got that Florida State education. I'm smart, girl.
Go Noles.
Go Noles. Yeah. Well, we'll see. I can do a little. So Georgia Tech in Pittsburgh. Georgia Tech had their first ever run rule sweep of an ACC opponent in program history.
Yeah, run rule sweep. They run ruled, walked off every game in a 3-game series in the ACC. That's impressive. They outscored Pitt 32-6. And we were just talking about Virginia Tech's long ball. Georgia Tech's number 2 in the country with, 43 home runs? And crazy. You noted number 1 in Power 5 conferences. Georgia yeah. Tech, ladies and gentlemen, is number 2 in the country in home runs. And they haven't slowed down from game 1. Their swings are out of control in a good way.
In a really good way. And we got to talk a little bit about that too with head coach Eileen Morales last week in mm-hmm. that interview. So if you haven't watched it yet, go back on our YouTube channel and different channels, right, that we have all these podcasts on, and check that out, because Coach Morales had some really good insight. So not only that, Georgia Tech and the Yellow Jackets right now are on an 11-game winning streak. This is the longest winning streak in the Eileen Morales era. So I think it's safe to say that she's doing some really great stuff with the Yellow.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what they do moving forward. It's not yeah. like they haven't been tested this season. They went down to Clearwater. They had games against Alabama. They're playing good competition. I want to see their growth through the season. They weren't able to win those tough games, but I think as they continue to get more confidence, keep swinging it, it's going to pay off in the long run. So I've got my eye on Georgia Tech to really, you know, make some noise moving forward.
Don't we all, right? I hope yeah. everybody across the country is watching Georgia Tech, because they yeah. are definitely a force to be reckoned with right now. A couple of key players for them. Madison Dobbins, first player in the ACC this season to reach 30 RBI, doing so eloquently. Love that. Mallory Black, we got to talk about her last week too with Coach Morales. Great to see her right now. Just finding so much success. You know, I think she's already leaps and bounds ahead of where she was last season. And mm-hmm. I think that's just a testament to all the hard work that she's put in throughout her whole career. That's not a new thing, right? That's really the body of work, which I think is awesome. She's on an 18-game on-game streak. So our on-base, I guess, streak, right? Whatever. Yep. Whatever that is. So definitely stays consistent for the Yellow Jackets. Mallory Black is definitely a force to be reckoned with in the box. So yep. Virginia Boston College. What do you have on that?
We're kind of changing gears. We're just talking about all the home runs in Virginia, BC. We had a good old pitcher's duel game one with Abby Dunning from Boston College and Eden Bigham from Virginia. 1-0 was it ball game? I tell you what, Abby Dunning from BC hasn't had a ton of success in the past, but she's a legit pitcher. She's a legit ace, and I think she would challenge most pitchers in this conference for the number one spot on their team. I was watching her. She's got this rise ball, Alex, that you know, breaks up, but it's also tailing into the hands of righty hitters. And she's getting so many swing and misses and lazy fly balls that, I mean, she's pretty filthy. And then Eden Bigham, she's got a nice rise ball, but her changeup was on point. So it was really refreshing. I know we all love the long ball, but it was refreshing to see a clean 1-0, you know, pitcher's duel out there. So I enjoyed that matchup. It was hard fought by both teams, and you know, Boston College was able to grab one.
Yeah, I like it too. And you talk about pitching duel, and it was only 2 hits on that day, yeah. right, for game yeah. one. I think that's crazy. And just Boston College figuring out a way to kind of put things together to get a run across the board. Mm-hmm. But let's go back to the rise ball real quick. Britt, have you ever fallen victim to the rise ball? You had a Mean Girls reference a couple weeks ago with like, that's so fetch. And it's like, I've been personally victimized by a lot of people's rice balls. Like that's me. Okay. So I'm taking that oath.
I think it's better to ask if I've like the times I hadn't been victimized by a rice ball, because
the time you actually hit it
or right.
like, the times
or maybe. Didn't swing at it. Yeah. But I tell you, victory. you know, all these off-speed rice balls nowadays, like Valerie Cagle's off-speed rice ball is filthy. And if that was, I never saw one of those when I played. And if I had, Alex, no chance, chance in hell. I mean, I can stay through like a low changeup, right? Because you can stay in your legs, but you see something up, you're already hacking at it, and you can't stay down and through it, right? Because you're off-speed rise ball, mind
crazy.
Blowing to me.
It's crazy. I actually think I might have seen it. He might argue with me that it wasn't a rise ball, but it maybe was just like a spinner. Travis Wilson, my hitting coach, would pitch to us, right? And he would try to mimic some of the pitchers we were seeing, and he had this off-speed spinner. I mean, I swear sometimes I'd be like, pirouetting out there, like just rotating like on a freaking swivel, like swinging and missing or like popping it straight up, right? Just pissed. So I don't know how they do it, but screw the rice ball. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't change speeds
with it either. Come on now.
Oof. So, anyway. All right. Now that we got that out of the way. So game two, Virginia used four different pitchers, mm-hmm. not the cleanest game, but the Cavaliers came back to win. Mm-hmm. Four pitchers, six errors between the two teams. Definitely a bit of a more painful game to watch, I think, just on that perspective alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just shows you the depth of pitching behind Bingham and Dunning is not there for either team currently. So depth, we've talked about it more than once, is important, especially as you get into ACC team play and you're playing the same team three times.
Yep, yep. So Sunday, Virginia went on to clinch the series with a 1-0 victory. So another pitcher's duel. Sunday was mm-hmm. definitely another low-scoring ball game. Virginia coming around to score late in the game in the sixth inning. So Hilton had a center, or I'm sorry, she singled to left center. Boggs came around to score, and that was the only run of the game. Virginia looking pretty good right now. Definitely has some things to work on and clean up, but should be pleased with their performance. All right.
I'm sorry, but yes, we have to talk about it. Yes. We have to talk about it, Alex.
Painful. It's a little painful right now.
Let me start it.
Thank you.
So you can collect your thoughts and your emotions. So their trip to Oregon got canceled because of rain. They were supposed to go out and play Oregon and Washington. So they had to schedule some local games pretty quickly. So they played two games against Nichols on Saturday, won both those games. It was close games. But then come Sunday, they played Jacksonville University, who is above 200 RPI team, and they lost 5-6.
Dagger.
Alex, I mean, sometimes you're going to drop some games that you're not supposed to, but with an RPI over 200, that's a bad loss. The selection committee, easy bad loss for Florida State. Yeah. I mean, early in the season, does that take away their hosting capabilities? I think for sure that bad loss, unless something crazy happens the rest of the year, I don't see them being a top 8 seed.
Yeah. I don't know. It hurts, right? It definitely hurts. And I hate to count anybody out at this point, because I think you can do some really great things, right? Mm-hmm. If they play some of these ACC series and have substantial wins, if they have sweeps, if they have some really good, you know, road wins and things like that in general. I call them road, but, you know, they might not. I know they don't take into account home, away, neutral, things like that. But, you know, we play UF. We play some really big teams, mm-hmm. too, out of conference.
Can definitely make it up.
Right. There's things to look forward to. However,
we can definitely get some good wins.
Definitely need to take care of the ball. Right. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Just kind of lost it in the circle, I think, more than anything. It's hard when you get behind early. And you said it best last week, Britt. You were like, I want to see Florida State attack early and not always be playing catch up. And that's exactly what they did against Jacksonville. They fell behind 6-2 in the first inning. And again, like when you're always trying to play catch up, as a hitter, everything just changes. And mm-hmm. I mean, ultimately, like your game plans don't always change, but I think that internally, like you start pressing, mm-hmm. right? You feel like I've got to do it. If I don't get it started, who will? If it's not me, how, when, what, where, right? And so I think that it just, the level of pressure just inherently increases. And I think that alone is the hardest.
Yeah. And Florida State is always a team that always feel like plays so free and loose and having so much fun. And if you come out before you can even get your first at bat and you're a 6-0 hole, you're going to have that pressure, even though even if you don't realize it. And Jacksonville scored all their runs in the first inning with two outs. Allison Royalty got the start. She was rolling, gets two outs. And then before you know it, there's four walks, two hits, three runs, make a pitching change. Dan Lee comes in, gives up a bases loaded double, and we've got six runs. And they never recovered from that. And that's how quickly it can happen. But Florida State's got to clean it up in the circle, I think, to take that pressure off the offense and let them be who they are and free and fun. And, you know, you got to give them a chance. You got to let them make a statement early. Do your job in the circle. You're not going to be perfect. I don't expect them to be perfect. And Florida State's a team that in the past has figured out a way to win with teams that may not be the greatest team, but they know who they are and they stay true to it.
Agree. And I completely agree on that. And I think that, right, like we've all been a part of teams throughout our whole career where there were times, whether in the season or in that whole year, that it rolls reversed, right? So sometimes your offense leads you and carries you throughout the games, throughout the season, and sometimes your pitching does. And I think sometimes in our really good seasons, they take turns like, okay, our pitching staff carried us today because thank goodness, right? Thank goodness it was only 1-0 and we only had to score one run because that other pitcher was really good. And then there's times where it's like, holy moly, our pitching staff maybe lost it and we had to score 10 runs and it was 10-8 and it was crazy, you know? But good teams, I think when they have those successful seasons, they go back and forth. It's not always one aspect of the game kind of leading the charge and having to pick up the slack. So if I do know anything well, I do know Lonnie Alameda. I do know the Florida State program, and I would bet my whole life savings. I'm not a betting gal, but if I were, that Florida State is having that conversation right now saying, hey, our pitching staff is struggling. Let's figure it out. Offense, we need you guys to step up. Because too, what I know too is Florida State assesses themselves on certain aspects of the game, especially offensively, right? It's how many runs they score. It's when they score. Did they score in the first? Did they score the most frequently? How many quality plate appearances do they have? Things like that. And maybe what is typical for those numbers gets amplified. So instead of 14 QPAs or quality plate appearances, maybe it's 17 or 18 right now because they need a couple more, right? Maybe typically to win a game, on average, they need to score at least four runs. The offense does. Maybe right now it's six or seven just to be able to secure that because maybe the pitching staff needs just a bit of help. So good teams have those conversations.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's all about, is the offense going to make the decision and be like, all right, a new challenge. Here we go. I need to, we got to score at least six runs a game. Yeah. Or are they going to be like, God, can our pitchers just get it together? Like, why do I have to score six runs? So I think There's a turning point right here. Which decision are they going to make as a team? And I think the leadership there and the culture there tends to lead them towards, hey, let's go. I love a challenge.
Bring it, right? And you hit it nail on the head, culture, right? That's going to be the difference maker. So Florida State has a good culture. So I think that's the one thing that I'm not scared about, I think, more than anything. But let's get on to your Tar Heels. So what do you have on your Tar Heels as you take a swig of your coffee?
Yeah, my Tar Heels. I had a solid weekend, but once again, they're not playing the competition that, you know, you would want to see to get a real test, litmus test of what kind of team they are. And I think that's why they were 70th in the RPIs that came out this week. So they beat North Carolina Central, Oakland, Rider, and a couple other teams, but then they were shut out 4-0 to Rutgers. And to shut out this team is really, really hard to do no matter who you are because they're so good offensively.
Yeah, I agree. But I definitely think it's worth noting, too, in the five games that UNC won, they only gave up one run in all five of those games combined. So I think that's really impressive and definitely something to look forward to and tip your cap on. So I understand you are an elite competitor. You hate to lose because you're asking yourself why we shouldn't have lost that game. Like, I don't understand. But again, it's a transition year, I think, for UNC. True. And they're doing some other really great things offensively right now.
Yeah, they lead the country in batting average. They're batting .417 as a team. Come on now. I mean, it's amazing when one player can hit over 400 these days, but a whole team .417. Last year, they hit .275. Talk about a turnaround. And the other thing is 71 stolen bases, Alex. How do you even get an opportunity at this point in the year to have 71 stolen bases?
Yeah, you're getting people on because you're hitting the ball because your batting average is over 400 as a team, right? I think that's really good. So no, just joking. But I think what's so crazy is that, like you mentioned, just the differences year to year. Last year hit 275. This year I understand we're early, only a third of the way through the season right now, but hitting over 400 as a collective whole, so impressive. And then 71 stolen bases last year, they only had 70 on the entire.
Which is a respectable number, right? Well, 70 is a good, but 70 now? Come on. Come on. Catchers be ready.
Get them on, get them over, get them in, right?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's just how they're playing. So
yeah. I mean, if you can get on base and it's basically a double every time, just because you can steal a base, they got something good going on. But I'm going to be a little bit harder on them. They're my Tar Heels. I want to see them go against some competition.
Fair, but I think Chapel Hill has something in the air right now.
Yeah. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Louisville, 3-3 on the week. Another team I think that's just kind of been like, oh, we were really excited to watch them in the first week, couple weeks of season. Mm-hmm. And since we're like, okay, like we're just still looking for that level of consistency. We're not pleased. Like we're not displeased, but we're not pleased either. Mm-hmm. I think that they're winning good games. They had a good.
Well, they looking back, we got really excited when they beat Michigan. They had that 2-0 mm-hmm. win against Michigan, who Michigan just this last weekend beat Florida, run rolled Florida. So that they had a big win where, hey, let's go. Louisville, mm-hmm. you're on it. And then they have a loss to Villanova and USF twice. So it's like you said, the inconsistency that they have these highs, you know, and that's what, you know, how good they can be, but then they just kind of drop off some games. So we know that they have a standard that can be a team that beats really good teams. Right. We just don't see it on a consistent basis just yet.
Right. Show us. Just show us. That's what we're waiting for. It's what we're looking for, right? We love some good ball. So Louisville definitely has the potential just figuring out ways to execute, winning late inning and close ball games. They did drop a game to USF at USF's tournament. And that's just a team that, like, I feel like, yeah, we should beat them, you know? Mm-hmm. So again, we'll figure it out. It is still early. No excuses, but we got to get better as a whole. And I think that's fair because everybody wants to see the ACC excel, not just do well, excel. So.
Right.
All right. Some look aheads for the week. A couple of huge midweek matchups for Clemson. Clemson just continues to just tack on the games. I mean, holy hell. I don't even know how else to say it. Holy hell. So on Tuesday, quick turnaround too, they're playing Tennessee. That's Tuesday, March 5th, because we record on Mondays, 6 p.m. Eastern at home for Clemson. Clemson also taking on Minnesota in the doubleheader on Thursday, March 7th at home. And then they turn around and play a series that weekend too. So Coach Redman time.
I mean, come on. What a grind of a week after coming off your first ACC series, like going right at it. But and they played Georgia the week before, and then they were in the Puerto Vallarta tournament. I mean, they are looking to play good teams, right? Yeah. They want that RPI, those big games. And, you know, you're going to have to play games like this in the postseason. Prepare your team. I'm excited for that Tennessee matchup. The doubleheader against a good Minnesota team, beating a team twice in one day is something that Clemson needs to do, you know? Yeah. And so I like it. It's going to be tough, but it'll be fun to watch.
Fire me up. And a couple of ACC series that I think we were both most excited are – or for our Virginia Tech, Louisville this weekend at Louisville. So that'll be a good one. Just a lot of back and forth, a lot of home runs, I think. I don't know. Louisville plays like they're a bigger field just in regards to their fence is a little bit higher, but they do play like a shorter porch. Virginia, UNC. I think we're both excited for that one. That one's going to be good over in Chapel Hill. There's something in the air in Chapel Hill. And then NC State, Georgia Tech. That one is going to be a doozy. I mean, should we do a bet? Should we do an over-under of home runs? Because I don't know which park is shorter, NC State or UNC. So I don't know, Britt.
I know for a fact that the ball flies at both locations. As a player at UNC, it's $200 all the way around. Then as a coach at NC State, the ball flies out of there too. It's like kind of like a wind tunnel. Their field sits down and it just... I mean, the ball just flies. I think Georgia Tech's got to be excited to be playing in Raleigh. But NC State, you know, they're excited for a challenge. They're excited to play Georgia Tech. Over under on the weekend home runs, Alex, over under 7.5.
Oh, I was going to go 9.5. It's so funny that we were both on that.
Well, you have to do halves, so over under.
Yeah, let's all right. Vegas, so baby.
8.5 over under total home runs.
Deal. I'm going to go over.
You're going to go over, so that means I have to go under. I think I'm going to lose this bet. But, yeah, all right. We'll have to wait and see. But what that's – and would you think coming into this season, we'd be that excited about an NC State Georgia Tech matchup. No chance.
No
chance. But these two teams have really showed us something, and I am super excited for that matchup.
Fire me up. I think that there still are two sleeper teams. So let's see who comes out on top. Let's see how they play. I'm excited. I think there's a lot of good things that are going to happen that series. We've seen some really good defense from them, obviously pitching in the circle too. Has just gone back and forth, but it really has been the game of offense.
Overall. Well, give me your picks for the matchups. Virginia Tech, Louisville, what you got?
All right, I got Virginia Tech on that one.
Virginia, UNC.
I'm going to go with UNC just because your Tar Heels are absolutely swinging it. Mm-hmm. NC State, Georgia Tech. I am going to go with Yellow Jackets, Georgia Tech. They're just hitting it too hard right now.
And a sweep?
I think it's going to be tough. I think NC State could secure one. I'm going to go, I think NC State could win game two, honestly. Yeah. I mean, don't quote me on that one, but like, I think
I'm quoting you. You just said it on the record.
Got it on the record.
No, the I agree with you with those. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
And I don't think there's going to be a sweep.
Okay. I'm with it too. So
all
right. I think depth right now is the question. So we'll see. I guess everybody can tune in and I'll have to write that down somewhere so that we can kind of keep track and we'll text each other throughout the weekend to see how we match up. So awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining us on episode 5, week 4 rundown of ACC softball across the country. All good things happening, exciting, really tough games, a lot of great competition, and a lot of things that we're looking forward to. So thanks for joining us. And if you have any questions, comments, things like that, ideas, of course, don't hesitate to reach out to us or drop them in the comments below.